Hare Krishna, Hindu Mataji, Dandavat Pranam, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Guru Maharaj Ki Jai. Thank you so much, Mataji, for joining and giving your association. Hare Krishna, I welcome everybody to Bhakti Sangha Japa conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have these three Keshavananda Prabhuji to enlighten us on topic Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, 19th Chapter, 1st Verse onwards. Hare Krishna, Keshavananda Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Guru Maharaj Ki Jai. Please take over the call, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Now we can hear you, Prabhuji.
Yeah. Just a minute. Okay, so I think I have to speak on 419.1. Let's see. What can we do? Okay, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Maitri Ovacha. This 4th canto, 19th chapter, 1st verse. Atha adikshat raja tu hayamedha shatenasa brahmavarte mano kshetra yatra prachi saraswati. The great sage Maitri continued, my dear Vidho, King Prithu initiated the performance of 100 horse sacrifices at the spot where river Saraswati flows towards the east. This piece of land is known as Brahmavart, and it was controlled by Swayambhuva Manu. So, there's no purpose, so I'll read the next verse also. Tad abhipretya bhagavan karmati shayam atmana shatakratur namam rishe prithor yagye mahotsavam. When the most powerful Indra, the king of heaven, saw this, he considered the fact that King Prithu was going to exceed him in fruitive activities. As Indra could not tolerate the great sacrificial ceremonies performed by King Prithu. Srila Prabhupada writes, in the material world, everyone who comes to enjoy himself or lord it over material nature is envious of others. This envy is also found in the personality of King Heaven, Indra. As evident from revealed scriptures, Indra was several times envious of many persons. He was especially envious of great fruitive activities and execution of yoga practices or siddhis. Indeed, he could not tolerate them. Desire to build them up. He was asked due to fear that those who perform great sacrifice for their religion or mystic yoga might occupy his seat.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, your voice is breaking.
Breaking, how is it? Now it's okay?
Now it's okay, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Now it's okay, Prabhuji.
Fine. How someone excels another person thinks how fortunate the other person is to be advancing in devotional service. Such non-envy is typical of Vaikuntha. However, when one is envious of his competitor, that is material. Demigod and material are not exempt from this envy. Okay, let's see what can we do. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Yitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Venama Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Vedanta. Okay, so the Maitreya, he's on the presence of the school.
Hare Krishna, voice is not clear, it's breaking.
Yes. Okay, just hold on. I just have to probably go in my room. Now it's clear, what do you say about all of you? Hare Krishna?
Yeah.
Hare Krishna?
Kind of clear, Prabhuji. If you continue to talk in 1 or 2 minutes, it gets you're not able to hear. Maybe, I don't know. You can try, Prabhuji. Now okay. It's a little clear.
Okay, wait. I'll just probably change my internet connection. Probably, maybe. internet problem in India because of, I think everybody is facing problems, at least in Delhi. There's something going on. Yeah, just please hold on, all of you. Okay. Okay, now my voice is clear, all of you?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Yeah, okay. So Maitreya, Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtha Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaskar Sudeve Gaurvani Prasarine Visheshunyavadi Bhasha Adhishtara. So I was just saying that Maitri is recounting this whole incident to Vidur, and after actually glorifying Prithu, he's recounting a particular incident in the life of Prithu Maharaj, especially just before he got darshan of Lord Vishnu face to face, and that incident Maitri is recounting, where Prithu encountered Lord Vishnu. Prithu himself is Shaktivesh Avatar of Vishnu and a great devotee. So as a devotee, we all want to see God face to face. That's the only desire. I mean, so that should be the only desire. A hope against hope, as Raghunatha Goswami says. We want to meet Krishna, isn't it? We all want to do that. If you don't want to meet Krishna, then there's some psychiatric problem, definitely. I'm saying psychiatric problem because you're chanting his names at least for 2.5 hours. Somebody's unmuted. I think you have to check the mute. Hare Krishna. Hey, Mataji, can you ask? Somebody is unmuted. There's a problem there. Hare Krishna. Can you hear me?
Krishna Prabhuji, we cannot hear you, Prabhuji.
Oh, you cannot hear me?
Now it is okay, Prabhuji. Maybe this low is rising.
Okay. I don't know. If you cannot hear me, then please, I don't know. You have to tell me. I don't know what's going to happen. Okay, just a minute. I think I have to maybe keep this. If you cannot hear me, just give me WhatsApp. I'll see it.
Sure, Prabhuji. We can even connect. Kaltani Mataji can connect you, Prabhuji, if you are okay
with that. What? What is that?
Lalitangi Mataji can also connect you, Prabhuji, to the phone.
Fine. Yeah. Lalitangi Mataji, please inform if you cannot hear me. Okay. So the whole point is that. The whole point is that Prithu, in spite of, a devotee can, we are doing Mangal Arati, we are chanting, we are eating prasad, 24 hours we are infused with Krishna, but naturally we should have some eagerness to meet him, that person whom we are worshipping. And that's why I'm telling, if we don't have even a slight eagerness to meet him, then there's a psychiatric problem, or we are somewhere else even if we are here. That's the whole thing. Prithu was a great devotee. I mean to say, he was of a different caliber. He was Shaktivesh Avatar, and definitely he had a desire to meet Vishnu, and that's why he started this sacrifice. You see the point. It is said King Prithu initiated performance of 100 horse sacrifices. And it is said, Hayamed Shatena. So the sacrifice name was Hayamed. Now we know this, technically it is called as Ashwamed. But Ashwamed sacrifice is also called as Hayamed. Ashwa means horse, Haya also means horse. So he started the sacrifice. Now these kings used to do this sacrifice, by the way, to let others know that he is the absolute unrivaled ruler of the world. And then they can rule the world. So especially Ashwamedha Yagya, just like Krishna, Yudhishthira Maharaj should do Ashwamedha Yagya. And just by doing that Ashwamedha Yagya, he could announce to everybody that I am the ruler and I am the one who is a world emperor. If only on condition, if that Ashwamedha sacrifice is actually, it succeeds. Now what happens in Ashwamedha sacrifices? The king releases a horse, a royal horse, and wherever it goes, in whosoever kingdom it goes, that kingdom must allow that horse to pass by. If that horse passes by, if nobody does anything, then it means that they have surrendered to the king. But if they capture the horse, then there's a fight, and then that means they're not surrendering. So that was technically, in very simple words, that was Ashwamedha Yagya. Lord Rama, he did Ashwamedha Yagya. And Lav Kush, they captured the horse. And then they came and fought, and we know what happened. But the whole point is, Ashwamedha Yagya was a technique or a process given in Vedic literatures to announce that I am the world emperor. That's how it went. Prithu did that. Prithu, of course, his incarnation, the purpose of his incarnation is to actually rule the entire world and bring back the order, and actually to abolish that anarchy and chaos which the entire earth was it was enveloped in, and people were suffering. So before he started his mission, or before he started correcting things, everybody should accept him as a king. Otherwise, how he'll bring back the order? It's not possible. So if everybody should accept him as an emperor of the entire world, then he has to do an Ashwamedha Yagya so that everybody knows that. Everybody knows. He could have gone and done a secret meeting, but that's not the process which Vedic literature says. It has to be open to everyone. And as the horse went from kingdom to kingdom, the news would have went far wide, mouth to mouth. I mean to say, it was a very good process. So in that age when there's no internet, there's no phone calls, how do you announce to the world that I am the only one emperor? How do you do that? Either you go with the armies and then, you know, just smash people and keep on going, just like Alexander did. Either you can do that. Western civilization used to do that. They're just barbarians, you know. They just go and smash people, loot people. If you read Bible, the whole Bible is like that. Like these kings, you know, they used to go and destroy these cities, kill people, massacre innocent people, and then take over the kingdom and then go to next and next and next and next. Genghis Khan, he was doing that in Chinese civilization. Even in Istanbul and Persia, Chinese, they came and then they invaded the whole Persia area and they killed so many thousands of people. This is Western civilization. For them, either you surrender or we'll kill you. Actually, it's the other way around. We'll kill you and then you have to surrender. It's funny. It's crazy. We'll kill you and then ask you whether you want to surrender or not. Just go and attack. But Indian civilization is different. We believed in peace. Why to just make a havoc out of it and kill innocent people, you know? Just peacefully surrender. That's all. And we'll take care of you, no problem. But you have to agree or rule. So that's a very good system, Ashwamedha Yagya. It's a system from Vedas. Nobody has any problem. Simply the horse is going with a small troop of armies, and the horse is a royal horse, and it carries a plate that this is a horse of this king, and this is Ashwamedha Yagya going on, and if you don't capture this horse, otherwise you have to fight with the king or whatever, and that's how it used to go. So it's a very nice system. It's a peaceful way for conquering Ashwamedha Yagya. And on the top of that, Vishnu is satisfied because Veda says Vaishmedi Yagya, Vishnu is satisfied. So Prithu had two purposes to do this Yashmedi Yagya. One was to conquer the earth and announce that he is a sole emperor and then start his mission of and fulfill the purpose of his incarnation to bring back the order in the entire world and establish devotional service of Vishnu. And the second was he wanted to satisfy Vishnu. That was his whole purpose. So he started this. Atha Dikshata. Dikshata means initiate. Dikshit. Dikshit. Diksha of the word is the initiate. Atha matlab now. Dikshita means he initiated. Dikshata. Diksha means initiation. Dikshata means initiated in past tense. It goes in past tense. Dikshata. Raja. Now the king was initiated with Ashwamedh Yagya sacrifice. That's how the meaning is. He started that. He gave this idea to people, to his ministers, and they started this. So Diksha, I mean to say, Diksha has many meanings. One meaning is what we use literally, Diksha, which means initiation. It means initiation, but at the same time, for us it is a beginning of spiritual life, of course. Diksha means we have, for us it is, for us Diksha means we have, for us Diksha means actually we are connected to the parampara. That's how we see Diksha as. But the whole idea of Diksha is initiation. Now we are connected and our spiritual journey begins now. That's the whole idea of Diksha. It doesn't end there. Most of the devotees, they think if you're initiated, if you're Dikshit, then you're done and then you don't have to do anything else, but that's not the whole point. You just begin now, and now you have to complete the journey. So that's a whole thing here. But here the word is used in a different sense. The word here is not used in a philosophical way, but in a very pragmatic way. Pragmatic means a practical way that they initiated. Okay, they initiated the Ashwamedh Yagya. Of course, the word is used here, Diksha, because I mean to say, Maitreya would have said he started. Instead of Diksha, he could have said, Atha started, or he began the sacrifice. He started the sacrifice. He could have said that. But the word Diksha is used because there were so many preparations before Ashwamedh Yagya. And especially, Prithu was initiated in Ashwamedh Yagya. That means promise Diksha had, Prithu had to in this sacrifice. And that promise was that when he is doing this sacrifice, he cannot be angry on anybody. He has to abandon anger, lust, he cannot be involved in lust, greed, and all this. And only then sacrifice will be successful. So that's why it's called Diksha, because there was a whole mental and ceremonial preparations before doing the sacrifice. And whenever there's a preparation, elaborate ceremonial preparations, and also mental preparation, then the specific word Diksha is used. Always. Otherwise, if there's no preparation, ceremonial or mental preparation, if you just start a work, and the word uses start. What's the Sanskrit word for that? I forgot. Start. Chakru. Chakru, he did. Yeah, you can this. Yeah, many times Bhagavatam uses chakru. He did that. He started that. They could have used this word, or they could have used some other word. Started. I don't know. Some word I have to think in Sanskrit. I'm at loss now. There are many words for started or began. So by this word is very important because and the repercussions of this word will come ahead because Indra, he came and he tried to actually stop Ashwamedh Yagya. Why did we just talk in a moment? But he did that, and Prithu was helpless because Prithu was Dikshit. He was initiated in Ashwamedh Yagya, and the promise at the time of initiation was that he will not be involved in lust, anger, and greed. And he couldn't do anger. So he couldn't really retaliate what Indra was doing. He was trying to steal the horse of Ashwamedh Yagya. But Prithu was helpless. So he asked his sons to actually stop him. Indra. But sons were, probably sons were not so competent as Prithu. Of course, they were not competent. But that was the whole point there. And because of that, Indra could steal the horse many times. If Prithu was not Dikshit in this sacrifice, and if he could have done this anger business, there was no chance Indra would have taken any chance. I mean, to say, Prithu, so we just read, you know, Mother Earth, she escaped from Prithu's hand. She was going to be killed. And Indra knew that. Prithu was so powerful. And Indra would not have taken any risk because, but he knew. Atha Dikshit, Dikshata Raja. Prithu is initiated. He's bound. Diksha means you're bound. When you start something, you're not bound. But in Diksha, when you start something, you're bound by vows. That's the difference between Chakru and Dikshit, start and initiation. Initiate a thing. So he knew Prithu is bounded by these vows. So he dared to steal the horse. And he not only stole the horse once, twice, thrice, but I think he stole the horse, I don't know, some 8-9 times or 10 times, something like that, or 18 times, something like that. I forgot the real number. But nevertheless, he stole many times. So in different forms, he did that. And he did that. So that's the whole repercussion of this Atha Dikshit Raja Tu. Haya Medena Shatena Ja. So Prithu, he took a vow to do Ashwamedh Yagya, not just once, but 100 Ashwamedh Yagya. A super enthusiastic person. Probably very passionate person. We can understand by this. Of course, he was a king of the entire world. He had to have this passion. And so why he is doing 100 Ashwamedh Yagya? Why not one? I mean to say, Ram did once, Yudhishthira Maharaj did once. In fact, actually before this, so one thing is there that not only in Ashwamedh Yagya, but in any yagya, most of the yagyas of Vedas, when you are actually performing yagya, you cannot be angry, you cannot be lusty or greedy. That's the dictum of most of the yagyas. That is a mental preparation at the time of initiating any sacrifice. Just like we read in Ramayana, Vishwamitra, he actually begged for Ram and Lakshman. And Dashrath said, you know, why do you want them? So Ashwamedha said, well, I'm doing a yagya and some demons attack us and I'm helpless. I cannot attack back because I'm doing a yagya and if I become angry, the whole yagya will fail. And that's what demons are trying, that I become angry and the whole yagya will fail. So most of these vows, most of these sacrifices, and not only sacrifice but penances also get destroyed if the person becomes angry. Just like I was reading in one of the Puran, Vishwamitra. Oh yeah, actually in Bhagavatam only, Harishchandra and Vishwamitra. So Vishwamitra, he was doing a penance and Harishchandra came and he just so Harishchandra was on hunting and he went and he heard a voice. You know, help, 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 help. So he went there. And then he saw that there was no one. But then he saw Vishwamitra sitting there. And then he asked Vishwamitra, what are you doing here and this and that. But Vishwamitra was in a meditation and meditation broke. And then Vishwamitra said, you fool, you broke my meditation. And this person who was shouting, help, help, it was actually a demon to distract my meditation. But in spite of him distracting my meditation and protecting me, you distracted my meditation, so I curse you. So he cursed him. Actually, he was about to curse him. Harishchandra said, no, please don't curse me, this and this. Vishwamitra said, okay, fine. You give a promise, whenever I want anything, you have to give it to me. Harishchandra said, okay, fine. And then you know the whole incident. Vishwamitra came once and he asked Harishchandra, give me your entire kingdom in donation. And he had to give. So my whole point is, any sacrifice, any type of sacrifice, any type of penance, you cannot give in to yourself to lust, anger, greed, otherwise it breaks. That actually amounts to japa yagya, yagya nanam, japa yagya asmi. We are also doing japa yagya. And we can't afford to give in ourselves to lust, anger, greed. If you give in yourself to lust, anger, greed, this japa yagya will fail. You will have no or very less effect of chanting Hare Krishna, because that's a rule. That's why Krishna says, Kamesha Krodesha Rajogana Samadhava. Krishna says, first, abandon lust, anger, greed, because the process which I'm going to tell you, Japa Yagya, it will fail if you give in to it. So that's the whole implication of Dikshata. Okay, so now back again to a question. Why Prithu Maharaj was doing 100 Ashwamedha Yagya? Why not just once? Once was enough, I mean to say. Nobody does 100 sacrifices. But he was interested to do 100 because Vedas, they say, Shatakratu, Veda says, anybody who does 100 sacrifices, Vishnu is pleased with him. So by this we can understand, Prithu's whole purpose for doing Ashwamedha was not just to become emperor. I told in the beginning, he had two purposes. How do you know he had two purposes? If he would have done just once Ashwamedha Yagya, then we could have not deduced from that. Until otherwise it would have been mentioned here. But it's not mentioned. So we can't deduce that whether he's doing Ashwamedha Yagya for pleasing Vishnu. Of course, all yagyas are done for pleasing Vishnu, but the whole intention or the purpose of initiating the yagya is generally not to please Vishnu. The whole primary purpose is to conquer the world, as Yudhishthira did, or at least externally, or Ram, he did Ashwamedha Yagya. The whole purpose was to conquer the world. Of course, for establishing religious principles, that's another story. But the secondary purpose is Ashwamedha Yagya is that Vishnu gets pleased. Okay, fine. At least, so in a very external sense, the primary purpose is for all these people, Yudhishthira and Ram, was to conquer the world. And then secondary purpose is, okay, Vishnu is also pleased. Externally. Philosophically, of course, you can say Yudhishthira Maharaj, primary purpose was to please Vishnu. But pragmatically, or in Vyabharic sense, that was a thing. For Prithu, of course, philosophically for everybody, Yagya is for pleasing Vishnu, but for Prithu in pragmatic sense, in practical, in Vyabharic sense also, he had two purposes in his mind. Absolutely clear. He was not doing Ashwamedha Yagya to become emperor. Just, he was doing Ashwamedha Yagya with a planned intention to please Vishnu. How do we know that? Haya Med Shataina. He was doing 100 horse sacrifices. That's the whole point. And Veda says that Vishnu is pleased by 100 horse sacrifices. Vedas are very explicit in that. So, Haya Med Shataina Sa. And Brahma Varte Mano Shetre. So he did this sacrifice in Brahmavart. Brahmavart means basically India. Earth. The portion of the earthly plane. Brahmavart doesn't just contain earth. It contains Jambu, Dweep and other these. But the whole point is it is Bhu. It is Bhu. Brahmavart is Bhu. Bhulok. Bhu, the plane of Bhu. Plane of earthly plane. Brahmavarte, Mano Shetre, Yatra Prachi Saraswati. And this yagya was done on the banks of River Saraswati. By this we can understand this yagya might have been done in Punjab, or Saraswati basically flows in Punjab, Kurukshetra or Haryana, in that area. This yagya was, because Saraswati generally flows there, Punjab or Haryana area. So Prithu Maharaj, he initiated the sacrifice in that area, Punjab or Haryana, or maybe up in Himalayas. But of course, Himalayas, will not do yagya, such a planned yagya. So in that area, he might have done where Saraswati flows, and it was controlled by Swayambhuva Manu. Now that's interesting. Mano, Brahmavarte Mano Shetre. The whole land was belonging to Swayambhuva Manu, where we understand the whole India part. It was under direct rule of Swayambhu Manu and his descendants. That's why it is called Mano Shetre, the Shetre of Swayambhu Manu. So, I think Saraswati also flows in Allahabad, isn't it? Yeah, I think there were two branches of Saraswati. One went through Punjab and Haryana, other went through UP and all these places. And we know Swayambhu Manu, he did meditation in Naimisharanya in UP area. We know that these people were ruling in North India. And of course, their headquarters was in North India, in these areas, and then they were the kings of the entire world. That's why it's called Manoshetre. Okay, Prithu did something like that, so historically we can deduce something, some things. So, anyway, the whole point is, Tad Abhipretya Bhagavan. Now, what happened was, there was an interesting thing, when he did that, when he thought of doing this, Tad Abhipretya Bhagavan Karma Atishyanatmana Shatakratu Namamarshe. Now, Shatakratu, Indra, whose name is called Shatakratu. Now, Prithu is trying to do 100 Ashwamedh Yajnas to please Vishnu, because Veda says. Now, one of the names of Indra is Shatakratu in Vedas. Indra is called Shatakratu because he is the only person in history who has ever done 100 Ashwamedh Yajna. Nobody did that. Nobody thought of doing that. But now Prithu is doing. And Indra says, come on, you know, now he's my rival. That's the whole point. That's why this word Shatakratu is used. When Prithu is trying to do Shatakratu, Shatakratu becomes really angry. Indra. Shatakratu namamrishe. Namamrishe. He couldn't tolerate this. He said, well, if he does Shatakratu, then he will also be called a Shatakratu. I will also be called a Shatakratu. And I can't tolerate this. Same titles to both of us. At least externally this is happening. And Prabhupada says he became envious. That's the whole point. And Prabhupada says that's the whole point of conditional living beings. We can't share things. That's called also enviousness. Enviousness doesn't allow you to share things. Enviousness doesn't allow you to actually come on equal platform with anybody in this world. I am the supreme. Nobody can go beyond me. That's Shatakratu. So he became envious, and Prithur Yagya Mahotsavam, he couldn't tolerate his Yagya. Yagya Mahotsavam, Mahotsavam, his celebrations. Indra couldn't really understand that he is doing, his intention was to please Vishnu, his intention was not exactly to take the title. And even if he understood the purpose to please Vishnu, but at the same time, Prithu gets a title and he gets a rival there. That's the whole point. So he is envious. So that means Prithu is a devotee, Indra is a devotee, but nevertheless he becomes envious. Now that also goes. Even if the purpose is to please Vishnu, still you can become envious of that person. Now, I mean to say, Indra could have asked Prithu, why you are doing this Ashwamedh Yajna? Isn't it simple? He could have just, when Prithu might have been just relaxing in his bedroom, Indra could have come there, mystically, and he could have asked. So I would have told him, okay. But he didn't do that, because even if he did that, he would still be envious of Prithu, because the whole point is, he's taking the title. That's the whole point. So that's called enviousness. Enviousness blinds you, blinds us, isn't allowed to see the truth. The problem with lust, difference between lust and enviousness is lust blinds you. Enviousness also blinds you. But in lust, if you know the fact, if you know the truth, you actually then you want to control it. If you understand you are getting lusty and there's a whole problem in getting lusty, then you want to control it, and that's fine. But enviousness blinds you. But if you know that, you are envious, and even if you can understand that, and even if you can understand that that person is not doing anything to actually put me down, but actually his purpose is very different, still enviousness will grow. It will increase. That's the enviousness is a very different kind of force. So he became envious. Tad abhipretya bhagavan karma atishyam atmana. And he thought, well, this Prithu, tad abhipretya, he considered this matter. And he considered this matter. He thought about it, but he came to wrong conclusion. He thought, but he came to conclusion because he became envious. Enviousness doesn't allow you to come to right conclusions. Even if you're told, even if you're explained, even if you explain something when you're envious, you will come to the conclusion that this person is trying to defend himself. And so he's more envious. Or he's trying to do some politics. He's wrong. That's all. So enviousness is like that. You can't help it out, and it doesn't allow you to forgive. That's the whole idea. Enviousness doesn't allow you to forgive. In lust you can forgive, but enviousness you cannot. So Indra considered it, but he couldn't. He was so much blinded, and he couldn't come to right conclusion. He thought karmati shamatmana. Prithu is doing this sacrifice to become more powerful than me in fruitive activities. Exceed him in fruitive activities. That's what Indra thought. And he thought, well, now I have to actually raid this sacrifice. I have to destroy this sacrifice. Indra, Prabhupada says, Indra is several times envious of many persons. And Prabhupada also says that the demigods posted in material world are not exempt from envy. The whole idea is, Prabhupada makes 2 points. One is, even if you are very in status, if you are very high, even a demigod, nobody is exempt from enviousness. Nobody. And we often read in Bhagavatam, Prasapati became envious of moon god, Agni Dev became envious with Prasapati, Indra became envious. I mean to say, their envy goes within themselves also. And Bhagavatam says, in heavenly planets, there is no problem of food, clothing, there is no disease, there's no suffering, but there's one thing, enviousness. What do you do with that? Because other types of sufferings are due to lack of something. But enviousness is due to fulfillment of something. It's funny. Enviousness and greed, both of them. When you have, it increases more. But lust and anger, when you don't have, then these forces come. But greed and enviousness, especially enviousness. I mean, the greed also, if you don't have, greed comes. But if you have, then it increases more. But in lust, if you don't have, then lust comes. But when you get the object, it subsides. Anger is also like that. When you think, when somebody agrees to you, it subsides. Greed is plus minus. When you have those things, greed increases, of course. And that is why it is sometimes said greed is more dangerous than lust. Because lust and anger, they die after having the object. Or greed becomes more alive, more enthusiastic, and that's how you cannot get out of it. So greed is like that, and enviousness is the most difficult, because the more you feed it, the more it will increase. That's envy. There is no question of going down. That's the whole point. Lust can go down, anger can go down for some time. Of course, they increase afterwards. Enviousness is something different. So no demigod is. Demigods are fulfilled. That's my whole idea. Demigods are fulfilled in their life. They have everything. So what's the problem? They have females. They have money. They can just fulfill all their desires. The whole problem is when you're fulfilled, then there's another problem. When you're not fulfilled, then there's a problem of lust and anger. And it's fulfilled, then there's a problem of enviousness. So the demigods not exempted from envy. In fact, Srila Prabhupada says, non-envy is a typical of Vaikuntha. So Srila Prabhupada also makes a point, a devotee always thinks that if someone excels another person in Krishna consciousness, he thinks how fortunate the other person is to be advancing in devotional service. That is Vaikuntha. The more a person advances, the more you feel happy. In Vaikuntha, you feel happy when you go down. Material world, you become happy when you go up. It's totally diametrically opposite. So, such non-envy is typical of Vaikuntha. You see the point. That's how it goes. Vaikuntha is our temples, our devotional life, we devotees. It's Vaikuntha. Isn't it? Prabhupada says, we are living in a Vaikuntha bubble. But of course, Vaikuntha doesn't become by a temple, or Vaikuntha will not become by a place. Vaikuntha is a consciousness. If you are non-envious, then you can make any place Vaikuntha. But if you're envious, you can even make Vaikuntha as a stool, nonsense, material world.
He can do that. He can mess up the entire temple or congregation by enviousness. So by this whole incidence, to actually help us understand that even great people are not exempt from envy, and if it happens with them, then we must be very careful. Just like Brahma, even Brahma is not exempt from lust. He ran after his daughter. So even if it happens with him, then what about us? So that's the whole point. So this incident is not to demean Indra. It's to give us some instructions. In fact, Madhvacharya, he reveals another mystery. Externally, this is happening. Indra is acting enviously, and Indra is becoming envious. That's for sure. But Madhva says, internally, behind the scenes, Indra is actually not envious. Why Indra is stealing Ashwamedh Yajna horse? Once, twice, thrice, fourth, why is he doing again and again? Is he foolish? We have to remember, they are great demigods. So, and these demigods have witnessed God's incarnations again and again. And they witnessed many pastimes of God. And they've read whole scriptures. They're expert in Vedas. And how can they be involved in such a petty things when we can understand this? It's not good. Especially Indra, other demigods you can always argue for enviousness. You can make a case for enviousness. But for Indra and Ganesh, Kartike, Shiva, Parvati, these are great demigods. It's difficult to think like that. So Madhva explains, actually, Indra, why he was doing, because the word Shatakratu is here. Shatakratu means, so the word says, Shatakratu namamrishya. He did not tolerate. The verse doesn't say he actually became envious. So I'm talking according to Madhva. That's the whole point. Not according to us now. He says, Mamrishya, he did not tolerate. Now that point, now Madhva says, why he did not tolerate Prithu doing thousands of Ashwamedh Yajnas? Because Indra thought, okay, well, Vedas glorify Indra as the doer of 100 Ashwamedh Yajnas. If Prithu does 100 Ashwamedh Yajnas, then Vedas will become wrong. Vedas are eternal, remember. Vedas are not temporary. And Vedas say something, that injunction has to be eternal.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji.
Yeah, we are not able to hear Mataji.
Yeah. I think he logged out. I mean, he left the call. He's going to join again back.
Okay, I'll call him, Mataji.
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Yes, Mataji.
Prabhu is not picking up Mataji. And he's not looking at messages.
Maybe we will wait another 2-3 minutes and see Mataji.
Okay.
Sorry for the trouble, Vimuti, please. We can wait for 3-4 minutes and see Prabhuji rejoin. Because already Prabhu has told us that it's an internet problem. We can wait for 3 minutes. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Mataji, can you try to give message?
Sure, Mataji, sure. Mataji, Prabhuji's WhatsApp is not working, I guess. I mean, his internet is not there. The message is not going, Mataji. We will see another 2 minutes, Mataji, and then we can end the call, maybe.
The number you have dialed is currently busy. Please try later. आपके द्वारा डायल किया गया नंबर अभी व्यस्त है. कृपया कुछ समय पश्चात प्रयास करें. The number you have dialed is currently busy.
Prabhuji is joining Mataji in a few minutes.
Oh, thank you so much, Mataji. Hare Krishna. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Prabhuji, we can hear you now, Prabhuji.
Yeah. So where did you lose the lecture? I spoke many things. Where was I?
Madhvacharya, you were telling Madhvacharya and Vedas cannot be wrong, Shatakrutu.
Okay, there you go. Okay, fine. So I'll continue. So I was just mentioning that according to Madhva in this verse, Indra is actually not wrong because he actually deduces this fact from this verse. He says that Indra is not envious. Indra is just trying to stop this Shatakratu, this 1,100 sacrifice of Prithu, because Indra is thinking that Vedas praise Indra as actually Shatakratu, a person who has done 100 sacrifices. And and Vedas are eternal, so the injunctions are eternal, and if Prithu manages to do complete 100 sacrifices, then Vedas become wrong, and that's wrong. That's the blasphemy of Krishna. Krishna becomes imperfect. So to protect Krishna's glories, he is trying to stop Prithu's yagya. But the whole point is, how did Madhva deduce this fact? Now this verse, if you look properly according to Madhva, it actually speaks that, because it says Shatakratu Namamirshe. Indra did not tolerate Prithu's yagya. That's all. It doesn't say that he was envious. The word is not used Matsar. The word is used Mamrishe. So he did not tolerate. But of course in the purport they use Matsar, because did not tolerate can also means out of enviousness. But according to Madhva, he did not tolerate. Now, why did he not tolerate? Because of the fact that I just explained. Because he didn't want to defy Vedas. Now the another word is used, tadabhipretya. He considered the matter a lot. Now, enviousness is due to rash decisions. And of course, and not exactly due to considering the matter properly. Enviousness is considering the matter improperly. He considered the matter. And by that Madhva says actually we can deduce he actually thought properly. He was not in improper thinking. And he is Bhagavan. The word uses Bhagavan from Indra. Because Indra, Bhagavan generally means who has controlled his senses. Has controlled lust, anger, greed, enviousness. So the words used in this verse indicates that Indra was not envious. And Madhva revealed this fact that he was not. So then it is said karma atishayam atmanah. Indra, he considered the matter, and Madhava says karma atishayam atmana, that Prithu can exceed karma atishayam. He can exceed, he might exceed him in fruitive activities, but then he dismissed this fact. That is Madhava's opinion. He was not interested in this fact. He was interested in the fact that will be blasphemy for Vedas by this action of Prithu. That's what he was thinking. And he wanted to protect Prithu from this offense. You see, it's a very different story from Indra's angle, according to Madhva. But then we say that he was envious. Now, how to reconcile this fact? The point I was making is, how to reconcile this fact is, both can be correct, because he considered this, and he wanted to save Prithu from the offense and all these things. But Vishnu told him that actually you should act as if you are envious. Just like in Govardhan pastime. Govardhan pastime, Krishna told him that you should do like that. And you should show that you are angry and envious of me. So that people understand that even great demigods are envious. But internally, you do this because I have a plan. I have some other plan. So it's the same thing here. So we can reconcile two things. I mean to say, an actor plays in a movie, and the director says, "Well, you play in a movie. I'll be happy. Do you want to play a role? Okay, yes, I want to play." So your role is, I am the hero, and you are the villain. You have to be envious towards me. So okay, they play the role, and the hero and the actor and the director is very happy. Oh, you played a very good role. But the impression to the audience, it goes that the villain is a bad guy and he's envious against the hero. This is what is happening. So these demigods, these pastimes actually in Bhagavatam, and these pastimes between great people, they are teaching, they are giving teachings of many layers, of many levels of layers. Teachings for conditioned souls, teachings for liberated souls, teachings for Paramahamsa, simultaneously they are teaching to many people, and that's what these pastimes are for. Simultaneously contradictory teachings are also there. So that's why it's very difficult to understand Bhagavatam, because not just because the Sanskrit is very, very technical, or because it's difficult to understand Bhagavatam because philosophy is difficult. That's of course there. But one thing, it's very difficult to understand Bhagavatam. Very difficult, I mean to say, even very difficult is a low word. Why Bhagavatam is for Paramahamsas? That's the whole point. Because one factor is that the teachings are at various levels of consciousness. And the same incidents can give two contradictory, three contradictory, four contradictory teachings. At different levels of consciousness. Now, to accommodate all the teachings simultaneously, you have to be beyond all those levels. So only Paramahams can accommodate all these teachings harmoniously. Why? Because he's in connect with God. He's pure and truth is revealed to him. So like that. So this whole incidence is giving us many teachings. It's giving us teachings that we should not be envious. Indra is a devotee, Prithu is a devotee, but they're envious. That's the whole point. So enviousness can be between devotees also. You see the point there? That's what they wanted to show. You might be great devotees, both of you, but you can be envious nevertheless. That can happen. These both are great devotees. Are they envious? So enviousness doesn't occur only in the realm of non-devotees, but also in the realm of devotees, especially in the realm of advanced devotees. That's enviousness. So we have to be really careful about that. And if you and that's one teaching. And another teaching is that although these things are happening at that level, Indra cannot be blamed. We should not just condescend Indra that he's a bad guy, he's a villain, because there are other things going on behind the scene, and we have to understand that. Everybody's trying to please Vishnu at that level, directly or indirectly. At some level, they are trying. They are not. These great people, they are not devoid of this point of pleasing Vishnu, never. Even in the enviousness, they can't be. Just like we, even in devotion, we can't be devoid of sense gratification tendency. It's impossible. No matter how much we do devotion, we are made of sense gratification. Our body is made, designed to do sense gratification. We cannot be free of it at any point of time. Similarly, these people, they cannot be free of divine qualities at any point of time, because their whole body is made of divine qualities. That's why they are called as Deva or Daiva. It is there in the blood. All these Ahimsa, Satya, Saucham, non-envious, it is there somewhere. So things are happening, but then we can't just criticize, and we have to understand the whole broad picture. That's one thing. So even senior devotees can be envious to each other, but then if senior devotees are envious and we see the envious to each other, well, it's not, the whole picture is not just enviousness. There has to be somewhere a tendency to please Krishna also, but then there is enviousness also. So it's all mixed, but what we can do is we can see that spark of actually pleasing Krishna in both of them. Until otherwise, both are sincere devotees. That's the precondition, pre-assumed condition. If one is like nonsense, then it's over, you know. If both are sincere, then there has to be a spark of pleasing Krishna, and then there's enviousness because of confusion or whatever. And then we can work on that spark rather than solve the situation. That's how it goes. So that is whole pastime all about. So yeah, any questions anybody want to ask? I think I'll stop here. This is a very nice verse, and we have actually, it helps us learn many things. Okay, so anybody wants to ask anything?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for class, of course. A couple questions. You said that, you know, envy is going to be there among, you know, even elevated devotees. But I'm sure that it is certainly not there among pure devotees, correct?
Yeah, pure devotees will not have. But,
yeah, but
advanced devotees, if they are not pure, if you're super advanced, you can have, but pure devotees
uh-huh. Yeah, right. Okay, and then also, when you were saying that sense gratification is unavoidable for us, I need a clarification about that.
What's that? Can you repeat what you're saying?
You were saying that sense gratification, we're like composed of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So are you You're referring to conditioned souls, isn't it?
Yeah, you see the point. Our whole body, every cell is designed to do self-gratification. Our every inch is designed to do self-gratification. Our eyes want self-gratification. Our tongue wants, our skin and every cell wants to touch. And our organs want to take food and assimilate. And our brain craves oxygen. You see, it's all sense gratification. We cannot be free of sense gratification. It's impossible. Because we are conditioned souls, we want to enjoy, and we wanted matter. So Krishna says, okay, I will give you matter. You will eat matter, you will shit matter, you will be made of matter. Of course, we are soul, but then Krishna makes us think we are made of matter through illusion. And you will live in matter, you will die in matter, you will eat matter, you will see matter, you will be matter. You want matter, okay, fine, then take it. And that's the position of ours.
But for those of us who are trying to become more and more in touch with our soul, you would not say that sense gratification is, or would you say that sense gratification is unavoidable even for us aspiring devotees?
Of course. What I'll say, I mean, it's obvious. Even for all of us, sense gratification is the greatest block. That's the only block. If you overcome that, you have actually accomplished your goal. That's the whole thing. That's the greatest force. And for aspiring devotees or anybody, sense gratification, until and unless we are in this body, we are at big risk of involving in sense gratification. If you are disconnected from this body, if you are liberated, then only we can be saved. Otherwise, it's impossible. And all these aspiring devotees, advanced devotees, they understand this, and that's why in their prayers they are weeping, "Oh my Lord, I'm nonsense, I'm fallen." Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, all the perfected souls, but they are actually speaking that for all of us. That until unless we become totally disconnected from this body, and it's impossible to get out of this. I mean, how do you not become wet if you enter an ocean? It's impossible, no. You will become wet. So that's how it goes.
So you know, until we have zero identification with this body, we are forced to engage in some degree of self-gratification. But even, you know, even at that very advanced level where, you know, maybe, you know, some amount of detachment from the body is there, but not completely, that sense gratification, is it, at that high level, that sense gratification that a person engages in, wouldn't it just be for the sake of maintaining the body and not for any separate enjoyment?
Yeah, it can be for maintaining the body also. Of course, you're right, for maintaining the body. It's there for maintaining the body. But then at that level, even for maintaining the body, at that level when a person does sense gratification for maintaining the body, he can't even tolerate that because that is why devotees curse at that level this body, and they want to get out of it, and they want a spiritual body because they cannot tolerate sense gratification even for maintaining this body. But they are doing, they have to do, and so that is why as the devotee becomes advanced, he reduces his sleeping, eating. It all reduces because he can't tolerate. Because sense gratification is actually blasphemy of Lord, even for maintaining the body. So in that capacity, of course, sense gratification to the limit, to the extent of maintaining body, it's okay. It's not called sense gratification according to Bhagavatam, because we have to maintain this body. But a devotee is not really happy with this. He doesn't want to do anything for himself. But he's forced to do because he has to live and his body. And at the same time, when he's doing that, he gets pain in his heart. Krishna, I want to do everything for you. And so, please, my Lord, give me a spiritual body. And from there, a desire to get spiritual body is born.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. But just now you said that to engage in sense gratification, even for maintaining the body, is blaspheming the Lord. Is that only from the devotee's perspective or from Krishna's as well?
No, from both of them, because from devotee's perspective more, because from Krishna's perspective it's okay. I mean, to see, you have to maintain your body, but from devotee's perspective, he's pained. He doesn't like.
Only from devotee's perspective, not from Krishna's perspective.
From devotee's perspective, you're right.
Okay, last thing is, I think I got a little bit confused in the part of your lecture where you were talking about the fact that, you know, greed can always increase, but you said lust and anger, those two, you can make them calm down a bit by satisfying them. Did I understand that correct? That greed by, no, wait, is envy. I think you said, okay, is it both envy and greed? If you feed those two will increase, but anger and lust, you can quell them a bit by feeding. Is that correct understanding?
Yeah, they are perfectly fine. At least for some time they become calmed down. Isn't it lust and anger like that? If somebody loves someone, it's like that. We all know, you know. But if you get the object, it comes down. Of course, it comes back again. It comes. Greed and envy is different. The more you give, the more it keeps on increasing. It's very different.
But greed and lust, it seems like the more you, I don't know, those two seem too very close, isn't it? You know, the more you feed your lust, the more greed develops.
No, I mean to say, so that's why many scriptures, they say greed is very dangerous, even more than lust, because lust can calm down if you give the object, but greed cannot. Of course, greed is born of lust. That's one thing.
But that's my point, you know. We always hear that when you feed your lust, the greed increases.
Yeah, greed is born of lust, but the greed is a very different thing than lust. And unfulfilled lust is greed, isn't it? So it increases greed. But then the greed is a very different thing. It is born of lust, but it has a different characteristic. Lust is a father, greed is a son. But then,
how would you distinguish those two things, lust and greed?
Okay. Lust is defined as a desire to enjoy an object, That's lust.
Mm-hmm.
But greed is defined as a desire to actually possess that object. That's a very different thing. Lust, okay. To say, okay, so you can go to a shop, you can actually, so if you're lusty for some cold drinks, as you go to a shop, okay, please give me a cold drink, and you drink it, okay, fine, finish. But greed is, I want to bring this cold drink back to my home, and I want to keep a crate of cold drinks. So you want to possess it. That's a very different thing. So, and that is why it is said, animals are lusty, but they're not greedy. Humans are lusty and greedy. Humans will accumulate things. Animals will enjoy and leave. Isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's a very, very nice distinction, Prabhu. Yeah. Very nice distinction. Greed is the desire to possess more and more of a particular thing.
Yeah. So it keeps on, it's very dangerous, and even more dangerous is enviousness. Enviousness, it doesn't cool down, it never calms down. That is why it is said, the only way to get rid of enviousness is devotion, because there's no other way. Lust and anger, okay, if you give them objects, it can calm down for some time. greed and enviousness, it's impossible. Greed, okay. Greed also you can handle by... So if you become poor, and if you don't have anything, and if you don't have a capacity to buy anything or possess anything, if you don't even have money, then your desire to possess is over after some, because you cannot do anything, okay, just leave it. But enviousness, that is completely illogical, and you can be envious of anybody. A beggar can be envious of another beggar. You don't have anything, still you're envious. So
and this envy is characterized mostly by hatred, right?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And the only solution for this is devotion. There's no other solution.
Mm.
In this. Mm. So that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, Prabhu. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare
Krishna, Dandavat Pranam.
Wait. I think Mataji was asking. Can she?
Sorry. Yes.
No, Prabhuji. I was asking, like, is there anybody having any questions?
Fine. So this is what, Sureshwar Prabhu, or who is this? Hare Krishna.
Dandavat Pranam. Prabhuji, this is Ramchandra Das.
Okay, fine.
Prabhuji, I had a quick question. I know you gave a wonderful example that in this world, it doesn't very explicitly explain that Indra was not envious, and you established it on the basis of what Madhva has explained. But, down the chapter when we go, if you see in verse number 10 and 11, in the verses, it directly says that Indra was envious.
Yeah,
so
right.
I was trying to reconcile that, that in the verse itself it says that it was because I got the exact word also that's used in the verses. In verse 10 it says, Asuyan Bhagavan Indra. Asuyan means he was envious. Yeah. And in the next verse, in verse 11, it says that Indra was, the word used is Svardhan, which means envious. So we're just trying to reconcile,
You're right. So, no, exactly. So that's what Madhva is saying. So Madhva's logic is, when anybody starts recounting a pastime, the first verse and the last verse, that's according to the system of logic. The first verse and last verse, it gives the essence of that story. I mean to say, if you start any story, then you begin, okay, fine. This story is all about violence. And then you begin the story. And at the end of the story, then the story ends, so we have shown that this was a violent thing. Okay, fine. In between whatever happens, that's not the essence, mind you. So like we read Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre. So the essence of Bhagavad Gita is Dharma. Whatever happens in between in Bhagavad Gita, maybe Dhyana Yoga, or maybe demigods, sacrifice, there's so many things going on. But the whole essence is Dharma. And it ends in Yatra Yogeshwaro Krishna. So the essence is Dharma is Krishna. So that we understand. So we keep this in view, and then we read Bhagavad Gita. So that's technically in Nyaya it is called, when you have to understand the message of any story, you have to see the beginning and the end. And of course some few things, but that's very important. So now the beginning, the first verse establishes a fact that he's not envious. Now the whole point is, but in between now they say he's envious. So now we have to understand that this is not the purport of the story. Now then why is envious? So Madhva says, okay, this is a movie is going on, and in the movie Indra plays the role of a villain. He's playing a role of a villain, of an envious person. He is actually enacting. So when the author is or Maitreya, when he's speaking the story, he has to speak in such a way. I mean, he cannot speak the story, okay, Indra came, but actually he was not envious, then he stole the horse, and then he was not envious. That actually destroys the story. So when somebody is recounting the story, he'll say, okay, he stole the horse, he's envious and this. Otherwise, the story gets destroyed. So Madhva says, okay, so that is something externally happening. That's okay. Indra is showing he's envious. It's not that he's not showing. This is reality.
Mm.
It is happening. He's exactly playing the best part of an envious person. Because that's what Vishnu wants. So that's why this is happening.
Makes sense. Thank you so much, Dovidi, for the clarity.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay, so anyone wants to ask anything else?
Or we'll just enjoy life.
So Indra was showing, saying the role of a person envious, but he was not actually in his heart envious. Is that the point?
Yeah. He was just playing the part of envious person. He wasn't actually envious.
Okay.
So I mean to say, in a movie, you know, the hero is angry and he's trying to destroy, but actually he's not angry. I mean, from internal, he's just acting. So that bit is happening.
Yeah, just like I'm thinking also of, I don't know if this is a similar thing, but I'm thinking of what came to my mind is Vichasura. You know, he looked like demon. He was seemed like playing the part of demon, but he was not actually.
Who is that? Oh, Vritrasura. Okay, fine. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely, it's a good example from Bhagavatam. He was looking like a demon. He was behaving like a demon. He was angry like a demon. He was speaking like a demon that I'll kill you all. And actually, he was a devotee.
Okay, Prabhu. Thank you so much.
Okay, so anybody wants to ask anything, or we'll just hang it over. Okay then, Mataji, we'll just stop here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Prabhuji. Very nice question answer session and very beautiful class, Prabhuji. Thank you. If there are no more questions, we would like to end the call here by offering obeisances to Prabhuji and all the Vaishnavas. Vancha kalpa taropyasya kripa sindubhya evacha patitana pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Ananta koti vaishnav vrindaki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. His grace Keshavananda Prabhuji ki jai. Thank you so much, Prabhuji.